Can you predict what will come in 100 years? Or in 10? Or in the next minute? Some people think they can. They'll predict the shape of the future because they make the future. Because they see beyond the known dimensions of time and space into the unknown, Dimension X. We go ahead now in time.
Cosmic ray bomb they're testing out in the Pacific tonight.
A sparkling crystal diamond, vibrating at a higher frequency so y'all don't have to bother none.
Long run, our ship will make the CR bomb back page stuck.
Come take a listen.
Half the principles in this ship are pure theory.
Let your sensorium be nourished as Matt sheds light on the millennial ecstatics of the day.
So keep your mic open and keep talking. If anything goes wrong, we want to know exactly why.
Okay, looks like we are recording. All right, Dad, hit us. Say that again.
The reason behind the Gettysburg campaign was that General Lee wanted to take the pressure off of the state of Virginia, that where the Army of the Potomac had been, and it was real hard on the state. They were supplies were getting low, so they were going to move into Pennsylvania and to the north to take some pressure off and possibly even get in between the Army of Northern of Potomac, between them and Washington. So Lee
Hold tight. Let me jump in there because we do have an international audience now. Let's be clear. So the Battle of Gettysburg is, we could say, the most decisive, the most important battle of this American Civil War. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say, because there, if you look at writings about the Battle of Gettysburg, you will see a term called high tide. So this is often referred to as the high tide of the Confederacy. Like, you know, that's as far as they got towards winning their independence. And then the tide went out after that, and it was just a matter of time until the tide was completely out. But that's the, you'll see that terminology used, the high tide of the Confederacy.
Now,
and it was, okay.
I've got some goosebumps. I don't know if you remember my senior essay that you helped me write, dare I say, co-wrote it for Dr. Eggers' English class. Was not the 26th of North Carolina the high tide of the Confederacy?
They were a regiment out of North Carolina who played a prominent role in that battle. And so a lot of them were from Caldwell County, which, of course, that's where, you know, we live. So, they were very instrumental in what went on. But the intention was not, you know, it wasn't like everybody said, we're going to Gettysburg and have a battle. It just happened to be there. And the way the troops were stationed around, it just ended up being taking place there. And the first day, the Confederates.
So I want to make sure people understand, because it's the Southern Army invading the Northern Army in an attempt to make Washington.
Well, the Army of Northern Virginia is going into Pennsylvania. The Army of the Potomac is going to do something to stop them. And they didn't know exactly where or what. It, as I say, it just happened to all come together at Gettysburg.
Okay. Army of Northern Virginia is the Southern Army. The Army of the Potomac is the federal government's army, the Northern.
That's correct. That's the United States Army. The Confederates were in the West, and the Federals were in the East. And as they finally kind of came together north at Gettysburg, that's where they met. And Lee didn't want to start a general battle until all the troops of the Army of Northern Virginia were close enough that they could all be involved. And on July the 1st, 1863, part of the Army of Northern Virginia was going from west to east towards Gettysburg. There were supposedly a lot of supplies in Gettysburg, including shoes, which the Confederate Army badly needed. Now, so they sent, it was like a fact-finding mission. Some of the Confederate troops came towards Gettysburg, and they encountered federal cavalry. And the cavalry was supposed to hold the Confederates back till the Union Army could get deployed in west of Gettysburg. Well, they were able to do that, and the federal army came up, and as it turned out, the Confederates, they had so many troops there, they kept pushing forward. And the first day of Gettysburg was a total Confederate victory. They pushed all the Federals back through the town of Gettysburg and ended up on a place called Cemetery Hill and Cemetery Ridge.
Okay. See, okay.
If you, yeah, okay.
So Lee was Lee, the Southern, the leader of the Southern Army, the Army of Northern.
Correct. Virginia,
was going into the North, ostensibly to attack the North, or it was.
Well, to gather supplies and, you know, kind of live off the northern people like the federal army had been doing in Virginia, and if possible, attack Philadelphia, possibly Baltimore, or even Washington.
Okay, perfect. Okay, wow, I did not know this. As a southern man. So it wasn't attacking per se. Lee of the Southern Army was going into the North to show the northern people the consequences of war and take them the negative consequences that the southern states were feeling, so they would pressure the leaders to for peace. Is that
right? Exactly. Yeah. That was the hope, that there could be some kind of possibly a settlement, whether they defeated the army, the Federals in battle or not, but it put them in a position where it was better. Let's make a deal, kind of thing.
Got you. So it wasn't an attack per se.
No, circumstances just put everybody in the right place. And as I say, Lee did not want a general engagement on that first day. The enthusiasm of the other generals and circumstances, it just evolved into a bigger thing than they had intended to. And as I say, it was a rout. The Confederates routed the Federals and pushed them over into Cemetery Hill and Cemetery Ridge. There's two main features, or some main geographical features of Gettysburg, that Cemetery Hill, Cemetery Ridge, that's where the Federals were. Seminary Ridge is where the Confederates were. There's a Lutheran seminary in Gettysburg, and that's where the Confederates were. And then one of the most well-known landmarks at Gettysburg is called Little Round Top. And then areas called the wheat field, the peach orchard. You know, if you're reading about Gettysburg, those things, Culp's Hill, those are going to be landmarks that help you to understand where the troops were and what they were doing.
So, okay.
But
the first day of Gettysburg, it wasn't Lee was just going into the north to try to live off the land. He wasn't trying to attack. Maybe if circumstances presented themselves, he would attack Philadelphia, Baltimore, or Washington. They were just going to get shoes, and that's when they encountered the Federals, and it sort of all spun out from there. Is that right?
Right. The first day, yeah. Exactly. And as I say, the Confederates were able to push the Federals out of the town of Gettysburg, and then both of them took up defensive positions. The Confederates did not follow up their success of the afternoon of the first day. And that is a conjecture. Had they done that they possibly could have met their objectives by completely routing the Federal Army, but they were spent, and that, you know, they had, so much had been their resources had been used. The men were completely exhausted, so it was really hard to continue once they had reached that point. So both groups set up defensive positions, and. Okay. Then Lee got there, and him with his other generals, especially James Longstreet, then they started to decide their strategy for the next day. And that strategy, if you look at a map of the battlefield, you'll see the Federal line looks like a fish hook. A long shank up Cemetery Ridge, and at Cemetery Hill and Culp's Hill, that's where the bend and the hook is. So it looks like a fish hook. So
let me paint a picture for my international audience here. So literally, okay. The very fate of the United States of America rests in this battle. We might even say in this defensive position, in this fish hook. The very
thing. Yes, you can say that. As I say, because had they been defeated, then those towns we were talking about were it would be in jeopardy.
Right, right, right. Okay.
Yeah.
And when was the day? On what day did they? There was a hill that the Confederates did not take. And there's a famous scene, I believe, from a movie where they say, give me one division, I'll take this hill. Give me, you know, and they don't allow, somebody does not allow them to take a certain defensive position or a certain high point at Gettysburg.
What? Right. Okay. That's on the second day.
Okay. So okay. Before so we get to the second day, we're at okay. The first day. Lee is there. They're strategizing for the second day.
Correct. All right, so if you think about that fish hook, all right, the plan for the second day was to move troops south and come around the shank, that would be the left flank of the Federal Army, and come around into their rear. And at the same time, troops up at the fish hook to start. All right, so that happened, and the Confederates made a lot of, they pushed them back, and this Little Round Top was a very strategic point because with artillery up there, you know, they had their field of fire was the whole part, most of the battlefield. I think what you're referring to is the Confederates under John Hood. Most of them were from Alabama. The extreme left flank of the Federal Army on Little Round Top was the 20th Maine, and the Confederates were charging up the hill, and they were close to turning the flank of the Federal Army. And the 20th Maine, they countercharged down the hill and pushed the Confederates back into an area called the Devil's Den. And that prevented the Confederates from turning the left flank of the Federal Army. And subsequently, the troops moved back to Seminary Ridge, and everybody stayed in their defensive position. So the Confederates couldn't turn the left flank of the Federal Army.
They could not turn the flank on the second day and take Little Round Top.
Correct.
Had they taken Little Round Top, the third day would look a lot different, which is sort of the climax to this story, the third day.
The third day probably would not have occurred anything like it did, because it wouldn't have been necessary, because they would have turned the flank and they'd have come up behind, and the Federal Army wouldn't have had anything to do but to retreat.
Got you.
All right. So Lee was James Longstreet said, Lee, he had his fighting blood up. You know, the first day was on the right flank of the Federal Army. Second day was on the left flank. So Lee says, now the center.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, I mean.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Now the center. So Longstreet was in charge of the assault. It's more accurately to say Longstreet's assault, because there was
not Pickett's charge, you mean?
Yeah, well, you see, George Pickett from Virginia, his troops didn't get to the battlefield until late of the second day, and they hadn't been used. They were on the southern end of the Confederate line. Mostly North Carolinians were on the northern end of the Confederate line.
So first day was right flank, second day was left flank, and then the third day, Lee said, that is the center.
That's the center. We will attack them at the center.
Okay, so you're saying that, was it Longstreet was saying that Lee was in a fighting mood? What was the word?
His fighting blood was up. And he was going to, you know, a statement he made is, they're here and I'm going to whip them here, meaning the center.
And, okay. If I may make an observation as a psychotherapist, fighting blood is up. I wonder if anybody's made this observation. I would argue that Lee had been triggered, okay? Triggered, like we call that in therapy. When you're triggered, you're not thinking clearly. You are in your lizard brain. You can only think of one thing. So it's like his fighting blood is up. He's triggered. Lee says, all right, the left flank didn't work. Right flank didn't work. We're going to the center, which was ill-advised. That's my theory for you. What do you think of that theory, Dad?
I can agree with that. Now, it was ill-advised. James Longstreet did not want to make that assault. He was not in favor of that, because he did not think the Army was capable. Not that they, you know, not that they didn't have the manliness to do it, but the odds were against them being successful, because the distance between Seminary Ridge and Cemetery Ridge is approximately a mile, with but 3/4 of a mile with very little barriers for to get behind. It undulated, but the troops weren't, it wasn't like they went down in a valley and they couldn't be seen, then come up. It was very little of that. It was basically flat. Then they had to cross fences. They had to cross a road, the Emmitsburg Road. So it was not the best situation to make that kind of assault. There was approximately 10 to 12,000 troops lined up about a mile's worth. Now, they weren't all in a line. You know, had a line, then you had a second line, and then reserves. And Pickett...
Well, hold tight. This is Thursday. We're into Pickett's charge, Longstreet's assault, is what we're talking about.
Right.
Well, wait. Yes. Before we do that, let's exhaust the second day. So
okay.
The second day ends with the Confederates trying to flank the 20th Maine, and they fail. Is that
right?
And then
that's correct.
That's the big thing that happened on the second day. Is that right?
That, and there was an assault on Culp's Hill at the northern end of the battlefield that resulted in the Confederates not being able to take Culp's Hill, which had they done that, they would have had a good position for artillery to looking down from north to south along the federal line, but they weren't able to take it. So basically the Confederates ended up at the end of the second day in about the same position they were in at the end of the first day. And so then that's where, you know, we've done right, we've done left, now we'll go center.
So Lee, now, on the night of the second day, he's saying we've gone right, we've gone left, we're going to go center on the third day.
Yes, that's correct.
And
now,
who was in charge of not giving more men to take on the 20th Maine? Who?
Not any one person. Part of the problem was John Bell Hood was wounded early when the battle started on the second day. It didn't start till about 3 o'clock, but he was wounded early. He was shot in the shoulder, and after he recovered from that, that arm was useless the rest of his life, and he ended up also losing a leg in a later battle. But that kind of threw things into confusion because his subordinates weren't as astute to what needed to be done as he was. So that really made it hard on the Confederates, you know, getting reinforcements up and keeping things going. That really, really threw it into a quandary.
Okay, so, wow, all right. So John Bell Hood being wounded, we could maybe say is the reason why the second day was not a success for the Confederate Army.
That played a big, big role in it, yes.
And John Bell Hood was put in charge of the siege of Atlanta. Is that correct? By the federal troops were invading Atlanta, and John Bell Hood was in charge of that. Is that correct?
He was in charge of the Confederate Army there. Yeah, before he got relieved, he eventually got relieved. But yes, he was.
Now, did he have the? There was rumors he had a drinking problem.
No, I'm not familiar with it. He had a drinking problem. His wounds really played havoc with, I think, his psyche. Because, you know, you know, you lose a, you didn't lose it, but you have an arm that's useless and you lose a leg, you know, that's really going to kind of, you know, mess with you.
Especially in 1865, 64. No disrespect to the Hood estate. I feel I don't want to slander. I don't know where I read that. Maybe I'm wrong. Okay.
But that wasn't unusual. There when you read accounts on both armies, there were individuals who drink played a big role in their lifestyles.
Okay. Let's go into that, the more salacious aspects. Now, am I correct in that the leader of the Federal Army was relieved, General Hooker was relieved 3 days before the start of Gettysburg? Is that correct?
That's correct. And George Meade was placed in charge.
Now, let's give especially our international, well, a lot of people probably don't know this, but let's tell some salacious details about General Hooker.
Well, you read accounts of it that his headquarters was not a bad place to be. It was a lot of fun going on there. You know, they were drink was a big role there. Hooker was like the ladies, and so. You know, the Army of the Potomac went through about four different generals. Lincoln never could find somebody that he could completely agree with and was as aggressive as he wanted him to be. So, you know, Hooker was just in a line of succession. And Meade, you know, took it over.
Hooker, am I correct in the term hookers comes from the prostitutes that followed that he had follow him, and they were called hookers girls, and that's where the term hookers comes from.
That's partly it. There was an area in Washington D.C. called Hooker, and then when Hooker was stationed in Washington, you know, the fact that he liked the ladies and all that, it's kind of tied together, but yeah, that's part of it. Yeah.
Okay. So basically General Hooker of the Federal Army was having sex with prostitutes and getting drunk, and it was a big party 3 days before Gettysburg. He was relieved of his duties.
Correct.
So maybe if we had, if a drunkard and a guy who was just, having liberties with prostitutes, maybe the Southern Army may have won the Battle of Gettysburg. We could maybe argue.
Well, yeah, we can maybe argue that.
Okay. Now Meade, when Meade took over, is Meade... Meade did not, it was Meade and then Grant who took over, correct?
Correct. Yes. Eventually, Grant was in the Western Theater. And another big happening at the same time that the Battle of Gettysburg was going on was the Siege of Vicksburg, Mississippi, when Vicksburg fell to Grant, that was as important for the whole scheme of the war as Gettysburg was, because that gave the Federals control of all the western part of all the Mississippi. They controlled the Mississippi River, which, that cut off all supply lines out there. And then eventually, Lincoln appointed Grant chief of all Federal armies.
Okay, and relieved Meade of his duties, and for our international
Meade stayed in charge of the Army of the Potomac. Grant was just over everything.
Got you. So Meade was never relieved of his duties. Excuse me, Meade estate. He just was, Grant was put in charge of him.
Correct. Yes.
And Grant became, he became a U.S. president. I do not know what number president.
I can't remember. Yes. But yeah, it served two terms.
Okay. So Grant served two terms as U.S. president.
Correct.
Obviously, he would not have probably won two terms if he had not have been successful in the Civil War.
That's true. One thing about Grant, there was a lot of scandal during his administration, and he kind of fell on hard times after he got out of the presidency. And he had cancer, and he spent days and days and days basically on his deathbed, but writing his memoirs so when he died that his family would have a way of making of having an income by selling his memoirs.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah, it was kind of tough for him at the end.
And he was, that's a fact. He was criticized for having a drinking problem, right?
Correct. Yeah, he's had a lot of criticism for that. And I don't think you can say it was a big problem, but here again, drink was part of his character.
And there's a famous quote with Lincoln where Lincoln, people are saying, hey, Lincoln, you know, Grant is a drunkard. And he was like, well, whatever he's drinking, let me get the other generals that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's supposedly what Lincoln said, yeah.
Okay. All right, so we're done with the second day, I believe.
Yes.
And now we're heading into the third day. This is this will be July 3rd, 1863, correct?
Yes. Now, this is kind of give you an order. The main title would be Longstreet's Assault. It's often also referred to as the Pettigrew Trimble Pickett Assault, because those were the three main commanders. Pettigrew and Trimble troops had been involved in the first day. They weren't the second day. That's where on the first day, that's where the 26th North Carolina had so many casualties. But that's the three commanders of all those troops getting ready to make that charge or assault across that open ground between Seminary and Cemetery Ridge.
Okay, that's overall Longstreet's assault. We had Pettigrew, Trimble, and Pickett were involved in that. So Longstreet was above them.
Yes, and it was from north to south, it was Trimble, Pettigrew, Pickett. That's the way the troops were lined up.
Okay, so they had when did this assault begin on the third day?
This assault began approximately around 2 to 2:30. See, one of the more interesting things about that third day is there was a Confederate artillery bombardment of the federal line that lasted approximately an hour. And the idea was that the artillery would devastate the federal line so much, plus take out their artillery, that the charge would be doable. But one of the problems with the Confederate artillery, one, their ammunition was low, so they weren't able to shell them as much as they wanted to. Plus, some of the Confederate artillery rounds, see, this was in the day when you had fuses on them, and some of the fuses were set for the shell to explode after they got past the line, and they were exploding behind the line. Now, they were taking out some reserve artillery and reserve troops, but the main troops, it was going over them. So it wasn't as effective as they thought it would be.
I see. Now, Dad, hold tight. I do want to, before we finish day three and get into the charge, I do want to read a quote by William Faulkner. It's in a piece he wrote, Reliving the Battle of Gettysburg, if I may. And also for our international listeners, I do want to point out the Gettysburg Address that Lincoln made in, when was it, Dad?
November 19th of 63.
So he went back to Gettysburg to make the Gettysburg Address because this battle was so important. Is that, that's correct, right?
And they were dedicating a national cemetery where a lot of the troops were buried. It was to dedicate that cemetery. And of course, remember now, he was not the main speaker. There was another guy that spoke over an hour, and Lincoln just had a small part. He was not the main speaker.
Now, who was the main speaker?
I can't recall his name, but he was a famous orator of the day. And, you know, he had a quite dramatic speech about things. And then Lincoln just, you know, it's like, now, President Lincoln, would you like to make some remarks? And then, you know, he makes that short speech, which everybody remembers, but not the other guy.
Okay. All right. Let me read this William Faulkner quote. All right. For every Southern boy, 14 years old, not once, but whenever he wants it, there is an instant when it's still not yet 2 o'clock on that July afternoon in 1863. The brigades are in position behind the rail fence. The guns are laid and ready in the woods, and the furled flags are already loosened to break out. And Pickett himself, with his long oiled ringlets and his hat in one hand, probably, and his sword in the other, looking up the hill, waiting for Longstreet to give the word. And it's all in the balance. It hasn't happened yet. It hasn't even begun yet. It not only hasn't begun yet, but there is still time for it not to begin against that position and those circumstances which made more men than Garnett and Kemper and Armistead and Wilcox look grave, yet it's going to begin. We all know that. We have come too far with too much at stake, and that moment doesn't need even a 14-year-old boy to think this time. Maybe this time, with all this much to lose, then all this much to gain, Pennsylvania, Maryland, the world, the golden dome of Washington itself to crown with desperate and unbelievable victory, the desperate gamble, the cast made 2 years ago.
Yeah, I've heard that. That's good. I've read that before. That is really good. Yes.
So to paint the picture, this is a big deal, what we're heading into, okay? This is literally the fate of the Western world is at stake with this charge.
I think it's fair to say that, yes.
And is Longstreet's assault, Pickett's charge, what are they charging, what position, which hill are they attacking?
I happened to think of this, Matt. The speaker before Lincoln was a man by the name of Edward Everett, who was a famous orator, and he spoke almost 2 hours before Lincoln. So that's amazing when you think of it, that anybody could speak. Well, a lot of people can speak 2 hours. But anyway, he was more famous than Lincoln as far as when it came to giving speeches.
Okay, wow. All right. So he was the main attraction.
He was the main attraction.
guy, Edward Everett. He's kind of faded.
Yeah, he's just that little sub note that he was spoke before Lincoln at Gettysburg. So you've got all the troops. The bombardment is over. Now it's time to give the word to go. Okay.
So to recap, the Confederate troops have been bombarding the Federal troops with artillery, with cannons to soften the position. But the cannons have actually been going over the troops and have not done what they need to do.
Right. They were not as successful and as effective as they wanted them to be. And see, now, as I said, now Longstreet did not want to make this assault. And when it came time for him to say to one of his subordinates who was saying, "What should I tell General Pickett? Should he go?" He couldn't speak. All he did was nod his head.
Okay. Because he knew it was such a bad idea, in his opinion, but he knew he had to get it.
In his opinion, he did not think there was any troops capable of making that assault successfully.
Okay, got you.
So he was not in favor of that. So they started. Pickett started first. One of the reasons that it gets a lot of notoriety being Pickett's charge is after the war, a lot of the information that was being written about the war was being done by Virginians, and Pickett's division was all from Virginia. So that's one reason they had a prominent role in the writings of the Battle of Gettysburg. But his division did take a terrible, terrible beating.
Got you. So it could just be as well called Pettigrew's and Trimble's assault.
Yeah. Now, one interesting note, one of Pickett's subordinates, Dick Garnett, was, the officers were not supposed to ride on the assault because obviously that makes you a target.
Right.
But Dick Garnett, he had been placed under arrest by Stonewall Jackson earlier in the war that he wasn't doing his duty. And the circumstances of the war, there was never a court-martial proceedings because they never had time. So he was kind of under a stigma that he was a coward. So he rode across until he got killed. I mean, and part of the reason he did it was because of the stigma attached with what he had done earlier in the war, what they said he didn't do, which was it wasn't a trumped up charge, but it was not as serious as Jackson made it out to be.
So Stonewall Jackson was a bit obsessive compulsive, we might say. No offense to the Stonewall Jackson state.
And he was, it was hard for him to accept people who didn't have his level of enthusiasm for war. And so that made it hard. And I mean, he didn't, his own welfare, he didn't give it much importance. It was about what we were doing rather than his own welfare.
Gotcha. Which may, we might argue, got him killed because he was across enemy lines when he was shot.
Yeah, it could. It very well could have, yes.
Okay. So, all right. The order is given by Longstreet. It's just a nod because Longstreet is so torn with giving this order because he's so against it. He gives the nod. Then what happens then?
Well, then Pickett's – there is a – here again, if you look at the map of the battle, you'll see there is a copse of trees, little grove of trees that was the focal point. That's what all the troops were focusing on as they were going across. That was kind of the landmark, you know. They weren't all going to converge on that, but that was helped to give them a guidance about where to go. And there was, so the Pickett's group, division kind of had to go from right to left to get in alignment with Pettigrew and Trimble. And as they're starting to go, now, you know, a lot of times people think a charge is running. Well, these men are not running. They're in line of battle and they're walking. And
okay, so
and
walking across, they're walking about a mile to try to get to their objective.
Correct. And they're in line of battle. It's not like just a mob. They're in line of battle and being doing military maneuvers as they walk across there. And of course, there's the shelling starts, and they're too far away for rifle shots. It's artillery, and it's not until they get within 300-400 yards of the federal line that they start using muskets to fire at the troops. So every time when people go down, people step up to take their place. And once they believe, you know, it's hard to imagine, but there was a moment when the federal line was almost breached, where the men went over the walls and the barricades. General Armistead died with his arm draped across a federal cannon that they had just captured. And they were all along the line. Troops were getting into the federal line, but there was, this is a controversy. There was no reinforcements coming behind them. There were troops that could have done that, but they weren't sent forward. And, They couldn't hold the positions they got. They couldn't hold. And now, go ahead.
Okay. Let me just jump in here with that sentiment, because not to say I'm a military expert, but I have obviously researched the Civil War quite a bit. My trivia team dad, I tried to, for the listener, I was on an elite team trivia team in the Atlanta, Georgia area. Ranked top 10 consistently in Atlanta in team trivia. But I would always say I'm a Civil War buff, but they said, no, you're the son of a Civil War buff. So I was the son of a buff. But a lot of times that allowed me to, they would defer to me because I was at least a son of a buff. Son of a Civil War.
Okay. That's good.
And I will say this, this is a bit off topic, but I will say this for the record. It was early in my career with Chico's Bail Bonds, my trivia team, and there was a question that came out, and it said, what was the drug that was prevalent in use in the Civil War that was nicknamed the soldier's drug? And I said, definitely 100% laudanum. Okay. The answer was morphine. So is anybody who knows about their Civil War mind-altering substances, laudanum includes morphine and all manner of opiates.
But the judge, the guy who was doing the game, would not give me credit for lawing them because the correct answer was morphine. So for all my career on the trivia team, they always gave me crap about being so sure it was lawing them. But actually, it was the correct answer was morphine.
But laudanum was a mixed with alcohol was an easier way to take the morphine. But I agree with you. I would have, that was worth battling for that answer.
I petitioned. I made it an official petition. And he went to the home office, and they said no. And I did email them later. And that's a topic for a whole nother podcast. But I played a game on my iPhone, which is a computer game, the Battle of Gettysburg. And they take you through each day. They take you through very specific battles. And what I'm trying to say is when you get to Pickett's Charge, it is nigh impossible because it's just the way things are set up. You take a position and then surrounding armies will close in on you. So it is by far the most difficult challenge on the game. The other battles, it's easy to, it takes a couple tries and you master it and you win. But then when you go to Pickett's Charge, it took me like maybe 30 times to master it.
Wow.
So the stakes, you can tell the stakes are so high. You take a position and then there's so many troops, so many Northern federal troops, they just surround you. So that makes a lot of sense to me that they take the position, but they needed, in order for it to be any good, they had to have reinforcements coming right away. And what I found in the game, you had to be really, it was almost luck with where you sent the reinforcements. So you sent troops to take a position and you wouldn't know if you were going to take that position. You had to have a little luck where you sent the reinforcements is what I'm trying to say. So.
Okay. Yeah. Huh. That's interesting. I'm going to have to check that out. Now, there was also a wall on Cemetery Ridge that Confederate troops got over that wall and went into the federal line a certain distance. There's monuments there at Gettysburg showing that point. That is where the term high tide of the Confederacy comes. That was the high tide. They got that far. Had they been able to hold it and get those reinforcements up, then, who knows what the outcome would have been. But that's how the term high tide comes in.
So let me frame this for the international listener. So if the reinforcements would have come at this high tide of the Confederacy, then the great Satan of the United States that makes your life a hell would not be. So there you go. You heard it here.
That's very likely. You're exactly right.
So, but was the 26th of North Carolina, I remember from the research paper, they were part of that high tide. Is that correct?
They were, yes, and they got there's a monument to the 26th at Gettysburg showing how far they got, and they actually got farther into the line than the Virginia troops did.
And the 26th, were they a part of Pickett's or
Pettigrew.
They're part of Pettigrew.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah, they were. Yeah.
Okay, so the high tide, we've gone to the high tide, then what?
Now, then, once the Confederate troops went back to the Seminary Ridge, they thought that the next thing that was going to happen was that the Federals would charge them. But here again, you know, the Federal Army was kind of spent. So they didn't try a countercharge. Everybody just stayed where they were. The next day, it starts downpours. The Confederate Army starts to withdraw.
So we're back to Seminary Ridge. What time? We're still July 3rd, correct?
Correct. And as I say, Longstreet got people to say, look, you know, get ready. You know, there likely will be a countercharge. But they stayed in line of battle, but nobody, but the Federals didn't do it. So that was probably a lost opportunity by the Federals. But as we said earlier, that's hard to do when the troops are exhausted and you've got all these casualties you've got to deal with. That's easier said than done.
Right, right, right. Okay, so they've retreated to Seminary Ridge. There's been no counterattack by the Federals. And then what happens?
Well, then the next day, Lee starts withdrawing. And the Federals do follow them. And there's the Confederate cavalry has to kind of hold the Federal troops off, giving them time to ford the Potomac River and get back into Virginia. And
let me make that clear for people. So the Confederate Army is retreating. Maybe the Federal Army could have been a countercharge and wiped out the Confederate Army, but they were too spent, and that gave the opportunity for the Confederates to retreat back to Virginia, back to the south, over the Potomac, which was the Potomac separates what, Virginia from Pennsylvania?
The way they went, yeah, that was where they were going to have to ford is the Potomac.
Okay. So they're retreating. Now, there's one tidbit I remember reading about this, that as the Confederate Army is retreating, that Lee rides up and is admonishing, or not admonishing, but he's trying to encourage the troops, saying, "This is my fault. I'm sorry. I made this mistake." Is that true?
That was when the troops were coming back from Cemetery Ridge. He was meeting some of the troops as they were coming back and telling them, "It was my fault. You did all you could. This is my fault." Lee and George Pickett really did not like Lee, especially after Gettysburg, because when Pickett was coming back, Lee told him, said, "General Pickett, get your line your division over here." And Pickett said, "General, I have no division," because of all the casualties took. And later, after the war, Pickett saw Lee, and somebody said, "Well, there's General Lee." And Pickett said to the man, said, "That's the old man who destroyed my division."
Oh, Lord.
So so there wasn't any love lost.
So what was the casualty rate of Pickett's division?
Oh, 60% plus.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, very, very, very high.
All right, so they've retreated back into Virginia, and this was... Now, the Confederates had some success against the Northern, the Federal Army, but it was all downhill from here, correct?
Basically, but as you say, they did have success, but the success was at great expense because of the high rate of casualties that they didn't have the manpower to replace those casualties, whereas the federal army did. So Grant kept pushing and pushing, and every time there was a success against him, you know, he may have had to retreat and move his troops, but Lee took so many casualties that it was kind of like a victory, but being defeated because of all the casualties you're losing and you can't replace them. So okay. It turned into a war of attrition, and Grant was going to win that.
I got you. So, okay. The Confederate States could have won the war, but the odds of them doing that, it just increased significantly after losing Gettysburg and being forced out of the North.
Yeah, there really wasn't, at one time there was a peace movement in the North. It's, you know, let's go ahead and you know, we're losing so many people. Let's just let them go. But Lincoln, you know, wasn't going to do that. It was, you know, preserve the Union.
And if the Confederate Army would have taken these Northern cities such as Philadelphia or Baltimore, or obviously Washington D.C., then the public would have been clamoring more for to end the war, let the Southern states leave the Union.
Oh yeah, they would have, yeah, that would have been the American public would have not wanted to mess with it anymore. You know, let them go. It would have. They wouldn't have felt like it was worth the effort then.
Right. So that was the last attempt. That was the last chance they had to molest the Northern population. Then the war was just in the South, so the public sentiment was more in favor of it. Lincoln could get a second term, get elected again, and the war continues.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think we got it, Dad.
Well, okay. I've certainly enjoyed talking about being a Civil War buff. I've enjoyed talking about it.
I think you cemented your buff status, and I think I did a great job as a son of a buff, if I may say.
I must say, I will give you kudos on that, yes.
I'm going to send this to my trivia team.
Okay.
Let me just stop the recording.
Okay.
I won't hang up.